In Tolkien's epic trilogy, The Lord of the Rings, Frodo and Gandalf have a telling exchange early on in their quest to cast the Ring of Power into the cracks of doom from whence it was forged. Frodo is finally beginning to realize just how crushing of a burden Bilbo's gift of the ring will be for him, and how the fate of all Middle-earth rests on the success or failure of his task of destroying that ring. And he begins to lament to Gandalf, saying, "I wish the ring had never come to me." Do you remember this part? It's in the movies and in the books. "I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened." To which Gandalf replies, "So do all who live to see such times. But that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. There are other forces in this world, Frodo, besides the will of evil. Bilbo was meant to find the ring, in which case you were also meant to have it. And that is an encouraging thought." I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had ever happened. I wish we didn't have to live through such a pandemic, to see our country descend into madness over it, to see law-abiding citizens willingly relinquish their rights and freedoms to despotic governors. I wish we didn't have to live in an age in which our mainstream news media regularly engaged in a misinformation campaign against the American public in service to their own political interests. I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish we had never had to see our trusted authorities and institutions cheer the disintegration of law and order throughout our country. I wish they weren't actively dismantling and reframing American ideals like liberty and justice as inherently racist and misogynistic, a mere indication of our country's entrenched white privilege and supremacy. I wish millions of unborn lives weren't treated like pawns in a political game every single election cycle. And I wish Black Americans weren't treated the same way, trapped by a party apparatus in a pattern of deception and manipulation designed to steal and secure their vote and ultimately their souls. I, like you, wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had ever happened. But so do all who live to see such times. That is not for us to decide, though. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us. What are we to do with our fate, our destiny, our place in history, our teeny tiny little sliver of the pie of human history? What are we to do with that? What are we to do with the time that is given to us, with what can be truly said, that we can be truly said to be responsible for? And in answering that question, it's a good question to ask ourselves. I think it's worth reminding ourselves that the times that we are living in today are not without precedent. We've been here before. In fact, I would like to share with you a parallel, I think, a parallel to our times. I see a parallel to the times that we're living in the biblical book of Judges. Remember that book? Anybody read that book? Not a fun book. Not a pretty book, is it? Remember how it is? The book opens upon a fledgling nation settling into its promised inheritance. But we quickly discover that they are unable to live up to the ideals they've been called to embody as a nation. The Israelites abandon their covenant relationship with Yahweh, their God, and instead they faithlessly turn to serve the gods of the peoples they were supposed to dispossess. And in turn, Yahweh removes his blessing and protection from them, and he leaves them vulnerable to attack from the surrounding nations. Eventually, one of the Israelites, when the Israelites have had enough of their disagreeable living conditions, they cry out to Yahweh and they ask him to come to their rescue. And in Yahweh's great patience and compassion, he does. He does rescue them. He raises up for them a series of leaders. Leaders, by the way, who are deeply flawed, but who nonetheless are used by him to achieve some degree of peace and order and stability within the land. Are you beginning to see any parallels between the time that they lived in and ours? The bulk of the book of Judges, it's filled with these repeated cycles. Let's see. If I'm facing me, it would go, clockwise is this way, so I'll go this way. So these repeated cycles, right? They begin with the people's unfaithfulness, and then they're followed by enemy oppression. Then they're followed by the prayers of desperation, crying out to God, followed by Yahweh's gracious deliverance, followed by restored peace, and finally beginning all over again with the people's renewed complacency and unfaithfulness. And it just goes on like this over and over and over again. If you read the book of Judges, this is all familiar to you, right? Where do these repeated cycles eventually lead? The complete and utter breakdown of the society, right? The closing five chapters, the closing section of the book, the nation has descended into total chaos, a leaderless immorality from which recovery is very difficult to imagine. And peppered throughout that final section of chaos, we read the repeated refrain, "In those days Israel had no king. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes." Does that sound familiar? The book closes on those lines. It closes on those troubling, haunting lines, pointing to this lawless people's need for a more stable, secure form of leadership, for a leader who faithfully represents Yahweh's own will and ways, a king after his own heart. Now, again, do you see the parallels between their day and ours? Might this be where we too are headed? A leaderless immorality, chaos where everyone does what is right in their own eyes? In times like these, when a nation loses its way and begins to go into decline, what kind of a response does it demand of us? What kind of a mentality, what kind of character does that demand of us? Fortunately for us, there was one man who understood these times and who saw all of that time, all the period of the book of Judges, he saw all of that coming. He had already lived through a very similar situation, developed the type of character necessary to navigate his way through such a time of crisis. The man I'm thinking of is, any guesses? Oh, no. Nope, Jesus didn't live through the similar time. It's Joshua. Me, right? It's Joshua, not me. But the biblical Joshua, the one who's better than me. Joshua, Yehoshua, Yahweh saves. That's what his name means. Joshua's life was one which was characterized by a bold stance of faithful obedience in defiance of the faithlessness of his fellow countrymen. And there are two lines from his farewell address in Joshua 24 which illustrate this. So you might want to pull out your Bibles, because that's where we're going to be. It illustrates his stance particularly well. These two lines, which I think can encourage and instruct us today, since we too are living through some uncertain and chaotic times. So would you please turn to Joshua 24. We'll be in verses 14 and 15. We'll read those lines. And as you're turning to that, let's get a running start. What's going on in Joshua chapter 24? As Joshua, he's nearing the end of his life. He's an old man. And he summons all the leaders and rulers, judges and elders in Israel. He gathers them together at Shechem, where he delivers his farewell address to the nation. And he begins his address by retelling the history of all the amazing things Yahweh, their God, had done for his people. Now, how he had rescued their fathers from idolatry beyond the river, and most recently from death and slavery in Egypt beyond the sea. How he had sent the hornet ahead of them and fought their battles for them. How he had turned Balaam's curse into a blessing. How he had brought them into a land for which they had not labored and gave them cities they did not build and vineyards and olive groves they did not plant. And in light of all God's incredible mercy to his people, Joshua concludes by calling upon his people to renew their promise to serve Yahweh their God alone, to fulfill their covenant vow and faithfully live out the way of Yahweh as a light to the nations around them. And it's at this point in verses 14 and 15 that he says his two famous lines of defiant allegiance to Yahweh. He says this, 14, "Now therefore, fear Yahweh." That's, by the way, your translation says the Lord. But every time it says the Lord in all caps in a translation, it's actually God's personal covenant name, Yahweh. "Now therefore, fear Yahweh and serve him in sincerity and truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve Yahweh. But if it's disagreeable in your sight to serve Yahweh, fine, choose for yourselves today who you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are now living. But as for me and my house, we will serve Yahweh." Pretty sweet, right? No wonder why we have those plaques in our houses. "As for me and my house, we will serve." That's so inspirational. "As for me and my house, we will serve Yahweh." Go ahead. Serve the gods of your fathers that if you want. If you like, you can just serve the ones everyone else around you is serving. But as far as I'm concerned, as far as it depends on me and my household, we owe our allegiance solely to Yahweh. What a powerful statement, especially when you consider the context in which he said these words. Now, I just want to point out three elements of these statements. Three elements that I believe can help us navigate the kind of times that we're facing today. So if you're taking notes, if you like to take notes, this is a great time to take notes, okay? The first thing I see in Joshua's statement here in verses 14 and 15, first of the three things is this: don't let uncertainty or pessimism about the future dampen your resolve to follow the way of Yahweh. Don't let uncertainty or pessimism about the future dampen your resolve to follow the way of Yahweh, which is perfectly embodied, of course, in Jesus. Don't let it dampen your resolve to follow Jesus. Don't let your worries, your fears, your anxieties, your uncertainties, your negative outlook concerning the future of our nation or what kind of a world your kids will grow up in, don't let those things compromise your commitment to following the will and the ways of Yahweh. Don't let it. Even if things look bleak, even if you see the trajectory we're headed on and you have no hope, zero hope, that we will ever recover, you can't let that make you any less zealous, any less wholeheartedly committed to following Jesus. Take your cue from Joshua here. Here is a man who understood the times in which he lived. He understood the heart of his people. It wasn't a good heart. It was an uncircumcised heart, if we're using the terms from Deuteronomy, right? He saw the days of the judges coming. He knew that this was a people who were inclined to rebel against Yahweh, that they would never live up to the ideals to which they were called. Just look at the way he responds to the people in Joshua 24. After Joshua finishes his address, the people are indignant. What's their next words? They say, "Far be it from us that we would forsake Yahweh to serve other gods. No, God, Yahweh's done amazing things for us. Of course we're going to serve him." And what is Joshua's response? "No, you're not. No, you're not. You can't do that. He's a holy God. You're not holy. You can't do it. You're going to fail." He even sets up a stone as a witness against them so that one day, many years from now, they might look upon that stone and be reminded of their faithlessness, reminded of their failure. Joshua knew there was no hope for the future of his people, for the future of his nation. And yet, that fact in no way weakened his resolve to build a household which would remain faithful to Yahweh, even if all the elders and rulers and judges and leaders drove his nation into the ground after he had passed on. He didn't let his people's likely failure lessen his fervor or his faithfulness. So, don't despair, brothers and sisters. Don't despair, and don't give up. Roll up your sleeves, you and I, we have work to do, all right? And this leads right into the second thing that I think. The second thing I'd like to draw your attention to from Joshua's statement in verses 14 and 15. And that is this. Always maintain a clear distinction between your allegiance to your country and your allegiance to God's kingdom. I'm not being anti-American here, okay? Please hear what I'm saying, all right? Always maintain a clear distinction between your allegiance to your country, your citizenship, your national citizenship, and your allegiance to God's kingdom, your citizenship in His kingdom. The thing that enabled Joshua to keep investing in a faithful household, even when the nation was headed the wrong direction, was his ability to distinguish between his allegiance to his God and his allegiance to his people and his nation. In the short term, yes, things might have looked very bad for Israel. But that's not where Joshua placed his hope. It's not what he was working for. Joshua's hope was not to make Israel great again, right? Just to throw that in there, right? Joshua's hope was in a promise that Yahweh his God had made a long time ago to Abraham. A promise that he was going to restore his blessing to every family on earth through his multi-generational family, through Abraham's multi-generational family. And this promise was not dependent upon a particular generation's ability to live up to their end of the covenant partnership. The promise was based solely on Yahweh's loyal, covenant-keeping love for his people and for his world, which meant that Joshua might have to wait patiently in the sleep of death, enduring many unfaithful generations before he would see that promise fulfilled. So if the nation that he knew failed, so be it. He could always trust Yahweh to keep his promises, and so he had every confidence in investing wholly in a household which was governed by Yahweh's rule, that operated under his kingdom. And we must make the same distinction. So many of us place our trust in our governing institutions only to see them weaken, to see them deteriorate, to see them fail us. And when these institutions are threatened, when they become corrupted, when they betray us, we lose all hope because we placed our hope in the wrong thing. We failed to make a distinction between our national citizenship and our citizenship in God's kingdom. It is only God's eternal purposes for this world that will last. And if we don't ground all our efforts, every endeavor, all our work in a citizenship and allegiance which is eternal, we will stumble, we will fall. I'm just telling you like it is. Along with all those temporal and passing things that we might have trusted in. Perhaps more now than ever, these things have become plain to us. So now more than ever, we should place our hope in the things which are eternal. So, which are trustworthy, which are dependable. The promises and purposes of God's eternal rule. There will come a day, and I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but if you haven't thought about this, has there ever been a nation that's lasted forever? Ever been an empire that hasn't fallen? There will come a day when the American experiment will fail. One day. Could be this year. Could be 100 years from now. Who knows? But there will come a day when our nation will cease to exist. What will be said of us on that day? Which citizenship will we have invested in? I don't know about you, but as for me and my house, we will serve Yahweh. Lastly, oh good, I at least got a few amens on that one. That's the hardest one to swallow. Listen to this one. This is the best one. I love this one so much. Lastly, third point, and after I'm done with this, we can all go home. Well, we'll sing a song, right? But three, lastly, the other important third element from Joshua's statement in verses 14 and 15 is this. This is my favorite one. So if you are like me, just love this, all right? Invest in what is in your sphere of influence and control, not in the wholesale transformation of a nation or a culture. Let me repeat that again. Invest what is in your sphere of control and influence, not in the wholesale transformation of a nation or a culture. If you think of the time that has been given to you Remember that conversation between Frodo and Gandalf? If you think of the time that's been given to you as an investment, ask yourself this question: what is worth investing in? The answer in our time is the same as it is in every time. The things worth investing in are not the big, grand, important, attention-grabbing headline issues that so often captivate us. No, essentially, the only thing worth investing in is the small, modest household with which we have been entrusted, over which we have been given authority. That is to say, the things that are actually within the sphere of our control and our responsibility. When we see the cracks beginning to form in the foundation of our civilized society, it's easy to freak out. It's easy to worry. It's easy to let our knee-jerk reaction to an ever-worsening situation dictate what sort of things we will now invest our time and effort and thought and money into. But for Joshua, he was convinced there was no better investment than in his household, that the pouring all his resources, his personal resources, all his thought, all his planning and strategizing, all his time and money, his sex drive, his ambitions, everything into the advancement of God's mission through his family, through the building of a household that had the potential to endure and have an impact on generations to come. And where did he get such an idea? Where did he get such an idea that the family and the household that they would build together, that was of paramount importance? Where would he get an idea like that? Oh, I don't know, the Torah, right? Think, just for an example, just think of the passage that stands at the very center of the Torah, the passage that is widely regarded to be at the heart of Israel's confession of faith, Deuteronomy 6, the Shema. How does it go? Hear, O Israel, Yahweh is our God, Yahweh alone. You must love Yahweh your God with your whole mind, your whole being, all your strength. These words I'm commanding you today must be kept in mind, and you must drill them into your children and speak to them as you sit in your house, as you walk along the road, as you lie down, you go to bed, and when you rise up, when you get up in the morning. You should tie them as reminders on your forearm and fasten them as symbols on your forehead. Inscribe them on the door frames of your houses and gates. Now, what sort of fail-safe system has God instituted within society to ensure it remains faithful to its founding ideals and standards, and most importantly, to its God? What kind of fail-safe system has he put in place in society for that? The family, the household. It's a fail-safe. You can't lose on that investment. They always say, you know, you can lose on investments. Not in this one. You can't lose. And who is it that's been entrusted with the responsibility of instructing, of training and equipping the next generation in the will and ways of Yahweh? Who is it? The professionals? The educators? The celebrities and influencers? The politicians? No, parents. Parents, they have been given the responsibility by God. You see, Joshua knows he has the most powerful mechanism at his disposal to actually affect lasting change in the culture, his household. And he intends to leverage all of the resources of his house in service to Yahweh, despite the downward trajectory on which the nation as a whole is headed. So contrast this, just for a moment, contrast this with the popular trend in the larger culture today, particularly among younger generations. Sorry, millennials and everything, you get picked on a lot, but you're going to be just picked on a little bit more, okay? People often spend, you see it all the time, people spending enormous amounts of energy and resources trying to tackle huge issues that lie far beyond the scope of their ability to significantly influence or reform. Too many today choose to invest their chief efforts in misguided activities like protesting or posting to social media in outrage over the latest injustice du jour. Whether that be economic disparity or systemic racism or climate change or whatever, I'm not saying that those aren't legitimate issues necessarily, but you know what I'm talking about, hopefully. Every day we hear people propose large-scale systemic solutions for problems which are all too often merely symptomatic of the depraved nature of humanity. Meanwhile, their own personal lives are an absolute mess. They haven't taken ownership and responsibility for what is actually within their sphere of influence and control: their health, their habits, their own houses. The Canadian psychologist Jordan Peterson, he's gained an incredible following over the last few years, in large part by advising younger generations in particular to clean your room. And he means that literally and figuratively, right? Clean your room, which is to say, take ownership and responsibility. Organize and manage those things which are most immediate to you, which are actually within the sphere, your sphere of control, before you impose your social, economic, or political opinions on the culture at large. And Joshua's defiant statement in 24:14-15, it reflects the same philosophy. As for me and my room, as for me and my house, as for me and my affairs, we will serve Yahweh. That means, and this is encouraging, I hope, if you're married, you should have children, and you should have as many as you can, if you can, of course, don't want to be insensitive, right? Then you have been given a sphere of influence, of authority, of responsibility that can potentially impact a society for generations to come. And that's exactly what we see in the case of Joshua. Joshua's investment in his household actually paid off. Did you know that during that generation in which Joshua lived, and even after he died, and the elders that survived him, the whole nation followed Yahweh because of one man, one man's household? That's significant. But even if the whole nation would have turned its back on Yahweh and forsaken him to worship and serve the gods of the nations around them, it was still the only thing worth investing in for Joshua. It's hard to overemphasize just how defiant Joshua's stance is here. I don't care what you all do. You can give your sons and daughters to Molech in the flames. You can sacrifice them on the altar of abortion, on the altar of sexual exploitation, on the altar of moral and sexual revolutions, just like the culture around you is doing. But as far as I'm concerned, as far as it depends on me, I'm going to embrace my responsibility as a father and invest everything I've got into the building of a household which faithfully reflects the will and ways of Yahweh. That is so amazing to me. So, we have a choice to make today. And I'm wrapping up. So, band, maybe you come up during this time. That'd probably be good, just to give yourself a chance here. We have a choice to make today. We can spend our time wishing things weren't as bad as they were, wishing the ring had never come to us, wishing these times had never come to us. Or we can decide that with the time that has been given to us, we and our households will serve the Lord. So let's take our cues from the inspiring vision Joshua had in his parting address to his people in Joshua 24:14-15. Number one, reviewing. Don't let uncertainty or pessimism about the future dampen your resolve to follow the will and ways of Yahweh. Number two, always maintain a clear distinction between your national citizenship, your allegiance to your country, and your citizenship with an allegiance to God's kingdom. And number three, invest in what is in your sphere of control and influence, your household, not in large-scale activist or political efforts to transform the entire nation or culture. Let us remember that there are indeed, to echoing the words of Gandalf, right? He's so wise, isn't he? Just like Scripture. Let us remember there are indeed other forces at work in this world besides the will of evil, right? In our society. Joshua was meant to live in the times that he did, in which case we were also meant to live in such times. And that is an encouraging thought.